feel truly? How did it feel? Man, there's something about singing that just shoots you right out of your mind into your heart. They say singing is like praying twice. And the reason they say that is you cut right to the chase. You cut right to the heart of the matter. And this editing, critical mind that is always telling you what you're doing wrong, where you don't measure up, how you don't compare, it shuts up for a few minutes. And it lets you have an experience of being right where you are in your wholeness. When you're singing, nothing is wrong at that moment. Your head is not telling you anything about what's missing, or what you should have done, or what you could have done, or what you better do. You're just having an experience of feeling, and that feeling of being in the moment is called wholeness, which is a very different feeling than the wholeness that we feel, the H-O-L-E, when we go out into the world looking for something we don't feel we have. And we come from that place of feeling like a hole. And we need somebody to fill that hole. And you know what happens when we go out into the world with that kind of mindset? Only another person who is empty inside or believes they are empty inside is going to come and resonate and vibrate from that place of, I don't have anything inside me either. Can you fill me up? Oh, perfect. I don't have anything inside of me. Can you fill me up? And as we say, it's a match made in heaven. I'm moving in. It feels like we have found our soulmate. Only to find out that they're exactly vibing with us, hoping that somebody will come in and make me feel whole. And you know what? That's our job. That is so our job. And it is such a simple fix that it is mind-blowing how simple a fix it is. We think, well, we're going to need some therapy. God, put some money together and go do some work. Well, maybe I'll go take a retreat. Maybe I'm going to buy some books, and maybe I'll go take some classes. I'm telling you, in the moment that you stop looking for what you believe you don't have and stop and sit down just like you're doing, you're just sitting. The chairs in my house are filled with feathers, and they're leather, and you sit down, you sink in. That's a chair. These are, you know, army surplus chairs, and you're sitting on a regular chair. So you don't need a special chair to get to your wholeness. That's what I'm saying. Any chair will do, even a rickety one, even your floor. And you sit down for one moment, and if you don't want to sit, you stand, and you let yourself open your mouth and sing. And we think, well, please, I'm no singer. But we totally misunderstand what the word sing means if we think we have to be a singer to sing, because just about everybody in this room, maybe two or three people who didn't partake, was singing. Singing is when you open your mouth and you make a sound. In Buddhism, they call it a chant. And they say when you lift a sound up, that vibration of sound creates for you something, an experience, a feeling of the moment, a feeling of fullness, and you begin to become, and here is a very Western word, magnetized by the sound that you send out. And we say, I'm not a singer, but chanting has nothing to do with singing whatsoever. It is about making a sound. The Bible, they call it a joyful noise. Well, you know what? We open our wallet and it's empty. We ain't feeling joyful. I'm so sorry. We think we have to be feeling joyful in order to make that joyful noise. And what it means is we have to make a sound that comes out of our mouth that has the resonance and the vibration of where we are in this moment. Because there is tremendous power in the word that comes out of our mouths. And we think we need to be somewhere else other than where we are, in some other mindset than where we are, to get from being that place of emptiness to that place of fullness. And I'm telling you, you are one sound away from it. I'm telling you, take one statement of truth. Take one sentence. Take one sentence that you know is true. Give me a statement you know is true, or a statement that makes you feel good, or a statement that has worked for you in the past that when you think of it, man, it just brings you back home. Name one. God loves me. These don't have to be everybody's. These are individual. God loves me. We are all one. I am. Come, what's happening over here? Is this just that you're just kind of just sitting in, what's that word called, when they just audit? You're auditing. Yes. I have no complaints whatsoever. Come, does nobody have an... The world says yes to me. I have everything I need to succeed, and thy will be done. And God is for me. Om Namah Shivaya. Yes, we can go into other languages. All is well. There's a teacher, his name is Joel Goldsmith, and he says this. He says, all of prayer hinges, meaning all of you in the turning point, when you want to make a turn from feeling that emptiness to feeling that fullness, you are one statement of truth away from making that happen. And we think, oh, when my wallet is full, I will feel that. When my bed is no longer empty and somebody's laying in bed beside me, I will feel that fullness. And I'm telling you, the feeling of fullness does not come after the person arrives. The feeling of fullness does not come after your wallet is full. The feeling of fullness does not come when the job comes. The feeling of fullness comes, according to Joel Goldsmith, when you make that turn within yourself and you take responsibility, which it's our responsibility. It sounds so crazy. If somebody would give me a job, I'd feel full. It sounds like it's somebody else's responsibility, but it's not. The responsibility lies inside of us to make that turn from the inner atmosphere of H-O-L-E. I am empty, something is missing from me or from my life, to the H-O-L-E sitting inside of the word W-H-O-L-E. They are two different consciousnesses, and they change from one to the other when you do something so simple. It's crazy how simple it is to move from one level of mind to another. And when we make that shift within ourselves, the world around us and outside of us begins to shift. Why? Because we are emitting a very different vibration when we're walking out to the world as an H-O-L-E needing to be filled up by anyone or anything, than when we walk out into the world, W-H-O-L-E. You know how it is. The moment you don't need a job, the moment you are full, that's when the offers come. The moment you don't need that man or need that woman, you don't need them. You might want them, but you don't need them with that desperate need, because you are filled inside of yourself with the wholeness of who you are. Man, that's when they come. And we know that. There's no magic to that. It's not a trick, but it is our responsibility. And that's a big word, because it means there's something for us to do at that moment. There's a story from the Old Testament, a lot of good stories in the Old Testament. There's a woman whose husband died. And this is a short story. Woman whose husband died. And she goes to the prophet Elisha. And she says to him, my husband died and he was a servant of yours. He was a follower of yours. And he loved God and he loved you. And meaning he was a good man. He did well by you. He did well by his beliefs. And now he's dead. And the problem with this is that he owed money. and he owed apparently a lot of money. Because our creditors, she says to the prophet, our creditors have come and they want their money back, and I don't have any money to give them. She, who's a widow, she has no money to give them, and she goes, so they want my two sons. Right? Those were hard days. We think we might have to give back the Beamer that we bought because we can't afford it, you know? They're going to take her two sons. And the response that he has is ridiculous. Here is what he says. He's a prophet. So you're thinking, good man, saintly man, high man, learned man. This is what he says. He says, what shall I do for you? Right? He turns around and he's like, why are you coming to me? What shall I do for you? What can I possibly do for you? How can I possibly help you? And take note of this, because you're going to notice everything in truth, is always about putting the ball back in your court. It kind of pisses you off after a while, too, because you want to see the responsibility spread around to other people, especially like your exes. You want your exes to take some responsibility. And the people you haven't forgiven, and workers, and your bad boss, somebody should take responsibility. And it's always, the ball is always put back in your court. And that's why this path isn't that popular. Why should it be that popular when the answer is always, what should we do for you? What are you going to do for you? It's like, me? Get me off the hook. And she goes in and he says, what shall I do for you? This turn, Joel Goldsmith says, this turn, and it's a turn. Because what we turn to is what we turn into. And we have totally got to memorize that line. If you don't have a pencil, take out your lipstick, right? And write it down somewhere, because it is such a huge statement of truth. Because when the darkness comes, we can't take our freaking eyes off the darkness. And the more we're looking at the dark, the darker it gets. The more we're looking at what's empty, the emptier it seems. The more emptiness is all we seem to see everywhere. It's all we start looking at, and the next thing you know, it is all that exists in our life. This is empty, and that is empty, and my feelings are empty, and my loving kindness is empty, and my childhood is empty. Everywhere we turn, when we come from the place of turning to the emptiness, that's all we see, man. Our eyes start getting trained on emptiness, and everywhere we go, the world is an empty place. What we turn to, we turn into. That's why what we turn to in moments when something is empty, and this isn't to deny when you open your wallet and if there's no bills in there, that there are no bills in there. This is not a place where we talk about pretending something's there when it's not. Oh, look, I'm a very rich person. If I were a rich man, yeah, dee, 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 dee. Hey, time to sing. It's not about pretending the wallet's full. It is recognizing the wallet's empty, and the difference is at that moment of emptiness, where are you going to turn? Because what you turn to is what you are going to turn into. And that responsibility, that turn, is entirely our responsibility. Now, pause. Okay, pause that story, pause that teaching, and let me take you over here to the teaching of Eric Butterworth, who was just a fabulous Unity teacher for a long, long time. He had stroke after stroke, and that man would not stop teaching until the day he laid down and just couldn't get up out of bed. He couldn't stop teaching the truth as he understood it. And it was the Unity teachings. And he taught in Lincoln Center. In Avery Fisher Hall. I think when he died, they decided to renovate it. They certainly weren't going to push him out. He was an institution in New York. And he had this visual that was just fabulous and so true. When an archer, of which I have, you know, as a Jew, zero experience, right? But this is what it might look like if you were a Jewish archer, right? And had never even seen an archery tournament before in your life, right? Here, Eric Butterworth says, is the archer. Now, he's got the, what do you call that thing? The target, thank you. I wasn't kidding. She's back there thinking it's worse than I thought. You have the target that he is aiming or she is aiming for, right? So she's standing about here, let's say 20 feet or 50 feet. How far away do you stand? Please, God, let there be somebody who knows what I'm talking about. What is it?
Like 100 feet.
100 feet? Do you know what you're talking about? You're kind of making...
I got it.
Oh, okay. Her guess is as good as mine. Let's say 100 feet. So you're 100 feet away. 100 feet away. And here's the interesting thing. The target is 100 feet away in this direction in front of you. Logically, you would think what you want to do is to take the arrow and push it towards the target. So you've just gained maybe 5 or 10 feet being in the direction, pushing it towards the direction you want to go in. And he said, that's not how it works in archery at all. In archery, what you do, and you take your arrow in your bow, and instead of pushing your arrow forward, instead of launching it in front of you in the direction you're trying to go anyway, you do something so counterintuitive. You take the arrow and you pull it back in the opposite direction in which it's supposed to move. The opposite direction in which you would think you want it to go. It doesn't even logically make sense. Why are you pulling the arrow in the opposite direction when the direction you want to go in is in front of you? Why are you pulling it back? And he says, Eric Butterworth says, just like that image, you pull yourself back from the emptiness you are witnessing with the eyes of your body. Because nobody will tell you that what is empty in front of you, your bed, your bank account, your inspiration, your ability to create and let it flow, nobody will tell you it's not so. What you see is empty before you appears to be empty. We pull the bow back. He says we pull back from the emptiness. We pull away from what our eyes are showing us, so that we can see the bigger picture that we cannot see with our human eyes. And why do we do that? Because until we see the bigger picture, we will not for one flat second believe that what we think is not empty at all. And if anybody tells you it's not empty, oh man, that's the last call you're going to take from them, right? You don't want to talk to people who are telling you that's not your experience, but in reality, capital R, beneath the emptiness that you see with your eyes, beneath the appearance, and that's the problem with the eyes, because the eyes are going to show you the appearance of what appears to be very factual, and it is. But when we pull back from the situation, turn away from the situation, we're not turning away to pretend something is different than it is. We're turning away from the facts that we see with our eyes so that we can turn to the truth that we see with our deeper eyes. But man, when our head is all up in the situation of what is empty and we're turned to it entirely and our face is in it, we can't see anything but the emptiness. We pull back as the archer pulls the bow back. We pull back, we turn, literally. We step back from the situation, we turn. We make a turn from the appearance of the emptiness that we see with our eyes so that what might unfold in front of us is a truth greater than the facts of what our eyes are telling us. And man, that's why the prophet said to her, what can I do for you? What shall I do for you? Because the turning she has to do. The turning, that's our responsibility. And that's not to lay a weight on, now we got more work to do. It's a turn. It's a turn of taking your eyes off the appearance so that with your deeper eyes, you might see a truth that you hadn't noticed before because you weren't looking. We can't see the fullness when we're all up in the emptiness. We can't see. We turn to an emptiness that exists in everything. On the spiritual path, they would call it, you're turning to the formless that creates all forms. You're turning to the nothingness out of which all something is created. You're turning to the invisible out of which all visible things are made. You're turning to the source, the secret source of everything. You're turning to what appears to be empty, but what in actuality is the source of all visible things, and it is invisible. And we are not used to trusting the invisible. We are not at all, because we think the only things that are real are the things we can see with our eyes. And here's what we know is true. The moment you take your eyes off of the appearance of emptiness and back yourself away, make that turn, you begin to enter a zone. You begin to enter a zone where your deeper eyes start opening up to you. And then he says this to her, tell me, what do you have in the house? That's why he's a prophet. Because it's genius what he says. What do you want from me? Don't look outside of yourself for something to fill you up, because you ain't going to find it there. That's what he's saying. What you're looking for can be found and will be found, but it's not going to be found in me. I can't help you, but you can. And look at his first question. What do you have in your house? Tell me, what do you have in your house? And what is he saying? He's saying, what do you have? Don't tell me what you don't have. Tell me what you have. Don't tell me what is empty. Tell me what is full. Don't tell me what is not right. Tell me what is right. We make that turn in the moment we say, what do I have? They call it the power of the I have consciousness. And you'll be reading it and have been in business books for years, but they call it by a different name. The I have consciousness is not new. It is as old as the hills. If you want something, you don't go out and ask somebody for it or hope to find it or look or seek and think it's going to be out there. You look inside of yourself and you ask the question, what do I have? So Joel Goldsmith says, what do you have in the moment when you face the appearance of an empty wallet, an empty bed, an empty relationship, an empty heart, your empty creative juices, the well is dry in that moment, what do you have? And he says, take one sentence that you know, one statement of truth. What's the highest statement you know? Thy will be done. I like many of them. I personally love what the Buddhists say. Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. Love it. Why? Because here is the loose translation of what it says. Let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life. Right? And when did people start hearing about this? When Ike and Tina Turner were having all their troubles, right? And Tina Turner said, I took my violent, abusive, horrible, hateful marriage, and I began chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo twice a day. And everybody's ears went up. Buddhists, nobody even heard of that. But when Tina, that woman is amazing. If you haven't seen her final tour, I think it was better than every other tour. This was her at 70. And I've seen her all throughout the years. This tour just, she rocked so hard. She took the teachings of Buddhism and distilled them down to a chant twice a day, 20 minutes, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. And what was she saying? This isn't saying, give me something I don't have, fill my empty coffers, help my husband Ike be better to me, change my marriage. She wasn't saying anything. All she was saying is, let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life. Let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life. And if you don't like Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, you say it in English. Let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life. If there's a vibe of life going on, I want to be in that vibe. What is the Tao? The Tao is the way, the flow. Let me be in the flow of life. You take one statement of truth and you turn to that. And you think, what in the world does that have to do with anything? And I'm telling you, what it has to do with is what we turn into. Suddenly, you have in your house a statement of truth that is so high, that is so true, that as you pull back from the appearance of what you don't have, now you're focused on what you do have. You go from H-O-L-E to W-H-O-L-E. Like that. And you think, my wallet's still empty. It appears as if your wallet's still empty. But in that moment when you make the turn, you have just changed your vibration. We don't talk about these teachings so that everybody can become holy rollers. We talk about them because they are practical, rooted, grounded, fascinating, and fabulous techniques that the truth, when put into your life and applied, so you experiment with it, not because somebody tells you to, because you try it out on your own. You begin to feel the feeling of I have, because I have aren't two words. It's a consciousness. It's a feeling. And when you begin to speak what you have, he says to her, tell me, he says, tell me what you have in your house. Tell me what you have. That's the turn. What do I have? We're not playing mind games with ourselves. We're not pretending with ourselves. We are turning ourselves to the place of wholeness. And while it looks empty, we are turning our place to ourselves to the creative emptiness, to the invisible emptiness from which all forms, all visible forms come. And he says to her, tell me what you have in your house. And she says, your servant has nothing in the house. And that's how she starts. This is why I love this story, because this could be so us. This is so me. I don't have anything. It's our first thing. I don't have anything. What do you have? I don't have anything. Now, didn't I just tell you that I don't have anything? And we demand that we don't have anything. What we turn into, we turn into. I don't have anything. There's nothing there. It's empty. And man, we cherish that emptiness so much that if somebody says you have something, we say, no, we don't. And that's her first line of defense. And I love her. For that reason, because the prophets, while they're all smart and saintly, everybody else is just like me. They get cranky, they get whiny, they're upset, they're mad, they want somebody else to fix their problems. This is what we want. Don't give me a lesson here, Prophet Elisha. Give me some money so I can save my kids. And he's giving her a sermon. Right? So she says, your servant has nothing in the house except... Right? If we don't go looking, if nobody tells us there is something that we have, when what it seems is we're on empty, we'll never go looking. And we'll think that what we have has nothing to do with what we need because it doesn't look like what we need. We only want the thing we think we don't have, and we want that thing, and it's got to look like that thing. But on this path, we understand that all visible form comes from the source of the invisible. So we turn to the invisible. We turn away from the appearance of emptiness. She says, except, she says, I do have a jar of oil. Except we do have one statement of truth. And we say, what's this jar of oil got to do with anything? How the hell is this jar of oil going to help me? How the hell is taking a chant going to help me? How the hell is saying, oh, I want to be in rhythm with the rhythm of life, or lift me up, or God is my source, or thy will be done, or I am one with the one? How does any of that have anything to do with what I need right now? Show me the money. Right? And he was trying to show her the money. This path is always, every one of the teachings is about trying to show you the money, but you have to suspend your disbelieving eyes for a moment and do something so different, counterintuitive, not head toward the target of making that money in a hysterical way. Now what? Now what? What should I do? What should I be? Send out resumes, call people. And in that place of such hysteria of I am empty, who's going to hire you? We know that. That place of desperation is an instant turnoff to people. We know that. My mother said that once years ago when I was young and I was looking for a job. She said, tell them you really, really need the job. I said, I really, really think. I'm not even going to get in the door if I tell them I really, that need is what drives away the very thing we need. What brings it forward, and look at this, what brings it forward, what attracts it to us, what magnetizes it to us is to look for what we have in the house, this body, this mind, this inner atmosphere. This is the house. What did she have in the house? She had a jar of oil. What does Joel Goldsmith says? One statement of truth is going to turn you from I don't have to I do have, and instantly your vibration is going to vibrate off of you higher. Just from that statement of truth, man. Now you add your voice to it, which is all a mantra is. And I'm sure Tina Turner wasn't singing her fabulous singing as she was doing her mantra, as she was saying her statement of truth. Man, she was wailing it like we wail it when we're in trouble. She was crying out like we cry out when we're in trouble. It's all you can do to get it out, but get it out. And eventually, some crazy-ass thing is going to happen. Because you're going to go from wailing, and I'm telling you, that vibration is going to start to lift because you have made the turn from have not to have, and you're going to find that that little jar of oil, that's all she had. That little statement of truth spoken over and over begins to lift your vibration and fill the H-O-L-E inside of you in that moment. In consciousness, you begin to become full from within, where everything begins, where the outer world takes its cues from what goes on in the inner world. And from that vibration, you will tip over into wanting and feeling like singing. I have a jar of oil, she said, except one jar of oil. And he said, go outside and borrow vessels from all your neighbors. And empty the vessels, and not too few. Go out and get, he says, as many more empty jars, as many more empty vessels. And what are we called on this path all the time? A vessel. Get as many empty vessels as you can, and then go inside and shut the door behind you. And pour into all those vessels. And when one is full, set it aside. Start pouring what you have. Start pouring what you have. And if all you have is one statement of truth, it's enough. Think about it. A jar of oil, one jar of oil, it's nothing. You go to your creditor. She's coming. They're coming for her son's a jar. Oh, here's a jar of oil. I hope this will keep you for the next month. They would laugh at her. A jar of oil is as small in that world as a statement of truth is in this one. And it's enough. One jar of oil. One statement of truth. Begin to speak it over and over in yourself. And begin to pour it. He said, just begin to pour. Begin to pour your one jar of oil into the empty vessel. And when you're done, go to the next empty vessel and begin to pour. Bring as many as you can. When you've gotten all you can, bring them into your house and start the pouring. Start pouring what you have out. And in that moment, the only thing you have is the ability to make the turn away from the H-O-L-E, away from the emptiness, towards pouring what you know to be true, even if it's one statement. And that's why I love that Tina Turner did it and then turned the whole world onto what she did. She said that was the only thing she did that changed her ever-loving life. And it changed her ever-loving life. Because it wasn't just about the marriage, it was about everything. It changed her from the inside out. She poured one statement of truth out, and she put her heart into it, and she poured. Everything else was crap in her life, but she had one jar of oil, one statement. Let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life. 20 minutes a day and 20 at night, but pour. And so the widow goes into her house, shuts the door behind her. She starts pouring. She takes a little jar of oil. And what do you think? You take the jar of oil, you pour it into another jar of oil, you're out of oil. But the funny thing was, she poured it into the jar of oil, and there was more oil left. So she goes to the next vessel, and she pours from this little jar of oil, and she pours and fills up the whole other vessel until it's full, and there was still oil left in the jar that she had. So she goes to the next vessel. And like this, she goes from vessel to vessel, keeps pouring, and the more she pours, the more there is to pour from the original jar of oil. And she continues to pour from vessel to vessel, still having plenty in the original one, pouring each vessel one after the other, until she arrives at the final vessel. There's no more vessels. It's the last one. And she poured, and then there was nothing left to pour. There were no more vessels to pour in. And so there was nothing left to pour into. So it was complete. With all of these jars of oil, this woman had enough to make a living and to begin to pay off her creditors. You see, the one statement of truth that takes your eyes off of the appearance of what I have not and turns it to what I have. The will to turn, the will to pull yourself back from what feels like a hypnotic magnetic glue, gluing you to, oh, I'm empty, I don't have it, I'm empty, it's empty, what do I do? Pulling away from that energy that would have you just put your head in that place of I have not, I have nothing. And pulling back, and it takes a little bit of a superhuman strength to pull back from the hysteria of a 911 telling you, you are just so in trouble. Pulling all the way back until you arrive at the place from I have not to I have. What do you have? I don't have much, but I have one statement of truth. I don't have much, but I know I have something. I have a jar of oil, and everybody in this room has some kind of jar of oil in this house and some kind of statement of truth inside of them. Make that turn. That's all you have to do. We're turning the 911 into the 411. We're turning a crisis into a piece of information. And you do it by making the turn. And when you come back out into the world, when you step over your threshold and come back out into the world calmer, you come back out with the vibration of wholeness, with the vibration of I have, with the vibration of I am, with the vibration of you've got all these cruets of oil filled. You got something to barter with now. Now you got something to sell. Now you got something behind you. Now she's in business. Now we're in business. Because we know what we have. And it is that I have consciousness that changes the vibration from emptiness in your wallet to fullness in your body. And from the fullness in your body, in your consciousness, in your mind, you become magnetized. And that which vibrates at your level, here are the words, comes to you. The begging, the scraping, the wailing, the seeking ends, and it comes to you. And that's a good day. Enough said. Thank you for coming.